So Trevor MacDonald came to Britain from Trinidad in the late 60s, and within a few years he had become ITN's first black reporter. He's known to millions as the face and voice of ITN's News at 10, and then ITV's News at 10:30. And he continues to delight audiences with his interviewing style and hard-hitting journalism. Here's how Sir Trevor signed off his final news bulletin on the ITV's News at 10:30 back in 2005.
And that's the way it looks tonight. And that brings to an end my association with the News at 10:30. Thank you for watching, and thank you for all your generous messages. Good night and goodbye.
Sir Trevor is with me now. Hello there.
Hello, Stephen.
Hello there. Do you miss it?
Not really. I mean, to be very honest with you, there are occasions when a big story breaks and you think, well, it might have been nice to be involved in that. But generally, no, I don't. I served there for a very long time. I did, you know, I had a great time doing it. That time came to an end and I was happy to move on.
And towards the end,
yeah.
Were you bored with it? Was it age and you were just getting tired?
No,
or
never,
you had
never,
enough,
never
or what
bored.
Was it?
I mean, I don't think, and I know you would probably agree with this, I don't think the business we're involved in ever gets boring. It's ever changing in ways sometimes which we were never able to anticipate. And so there was always a new day, a fresh story, a different way of looking at things. International news was always changing. I found that of particular interest. I never got bored. I mean, you got tired being there so late every night and the constant beat of it all, you know, never stopped.
So why was it time to go?
Oh, no, I felt I'd done it for a very, very long time. And if you remember, there were several sort of iterations of the news. You know, it was at 10 o'clock and then it moved to 10:30 and then they wanted to bring it back at 10. And I was persuaded in each of those times to come back and launch the new programs. And I felt I'd launched, you know, I'd launched a sufficient number of programs, and I thought it was time to come to an end and to move on and to do something else. And you know, there are so many other people who were you know, queuing up to do the news. So a good chance for them.
History has a habit of repeating itself, Sir Trevor, doesn't it? And of course, what they've done is they've moved the 10 o'clock news on ITV to 10:30, and replaced it with the nightly show, which is getting hammered.
Yes,
by
so
the critics.
I mean,
what
to
do
be
you
very
make
honest
of all
with
this?
You, I haven't watched a lot of that.
Have you watched any of it?
I've been involved doing other things, and to be very honest, I said to somebody the other day, by about 10 o'clock, after I've had a second glass of wine, you know, I watch sport and movies, and I'm ready to go to bed.
Have you watched any of the nightly show?
No, I haven't actually. I haven't had the chance to. On the very first night, I switched on, and then somebody called me from America, talking about American politics, and I sort of drifted off from the program, and I really haven't since then.
What did you make of what you did see in the first night?
Well, I mean, the thing is, I knew that you know, when we did it, the times were very different. The arguments were very different. I suspect now the great problem is competition for that slot.
Yeah, the 10 o'clock news in the BBC is very well resourced.
Exactly. And you know, ITV, a commercial channel, you know, has to fight for its life constantly. So the circumstances under which it changed this time were so different from what happened in my time, but that I was not able to make a judgment about it at all. Really.
I've been reading some commentary around the because look, the 10 o'clock news, be it on the BBC or ITV's News at 10, they are institutions. They're part of the fabric of our place.
Yeah.
So I've read some commentary over recent days saying, look, would ITV just stop messing around with it, moving it from here to there.
Yeah.
Do you agree with that?
Well, I'm very glad I don't have that job because I know you're in the firing line there. I think that, you know, ITV really established that time, you know, which I was lucky to inherit when I started doing News at 10 from, you know, the people like Reggie Bosanquet, Alistair Burnett and Sandy Gore and all the great other people who did that slot. And I was very lucky to inherit part of that when I started doing it. And it did become something of an institution. You're absolutely right. I think there was a time when, Blind Date, Coronation Street and News at 10 were the highest rated programs on ITV. Now, with a multiplicity of platforms from which people can get their news and so on, I think that whole you know, geography is of viewing is changed somewhat. And, you know, I haven't talked to anybody in ITV about why they moved it this time. But, you know, I imagine that there were hard commercial considerations involved.
Should they move it back?
I have no idea. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen.
I always love about interviewing a journalist?
Yes.
They're really good at avoiding answering the question.
I thought you found that with politicians. I heard you interviewing people after Martin McGuinness's death, and you seem to encounter that very well.
But it's true about journalists, actually. And I'm the same. Yeah. Like, people interview me, and you kind of you know what not to say.
But you know the hard fact is
you don't want to be drawn in this.
No, the hard fact is the circumstances of the move when I was there. To what it is now. Those circumstances are so, so vastly different that, and I don't follow it that closely anymore. I'm not that involved anymore.
But in itself.
To really have a good readout of it. So,
in itself, though, Sir Trevor,
yeah.
That's interesting. So let's move away from the politics of ITV because you don't want to be drawn out. Oh, there we go.
The politics of ITV, that sounds almost like the politics of Brexit.
But what is interesting is a man who was a newsman all his life is now choosing to watch DVDs or movies at 10 o'clock rather than watching the news. What's going on there?
No, listen, but because I'm around for so much of the day now, I am aware almost at every point of the day of what's going on. I listen to the radio in the morning. I hear stuff at lunchtime. Sure. I hear stuff early evening, the 5 o'clock program in the afternoon. You know, the news is on constantly. It's part of my life. And I will never, ever lose that. To be very honest with you, I now find myself watching very closely the first days of the Trump presidency. I spend a lot of time watching American TV what's going on.
It's intriguing, isn't it?
It's fascinating, absolutely fascinating. You know, I didn't cover that election, so I'm not clued in to all the stuff that's going on. But it's just wonderful to watch.
What do you make, as a journalist yourself, what do you make of the Trump administration's policy?
Well, vastly different
aggression towards the press. What do you make of that?
Vastly different to anything. American presidents have always had this kind of, you know, relationship with the press. You know, they love the press when things go well, and they don't when it doesn't go so well. So
come to Northern Ireland, you'll see what it's like.
Well, I know about Northern Ireland.
The aggression from some of the political parties. It's unbelievable, Sir Trevor, in Northern Ireland, where there's aggression from political parties one day.
Yeah.
And then the very next day, if it suits them, they're giving you a big hug.
Well, it's a dynamic that we know so well, isn't it? I mean, we both need each other, but there is, in that relationship, occasionally, very frequently, in fact, a lot of friction. And I, you know, in the general sense, and if one wants to stand back and be kind of quasi-philosophical about this, maybe it is a good thing. There is this constant friction in the relationship. And maybe in that we find what democracy is really supposed to be about. We're not supposed to like each other or always agree with each other. And that constant debate is probably good for the society and good for democracy, but it must happen within limits.
And do you think Trump's overstepped them?
I think occasionally The relationship there, from what I listened to, seems to be getting pretty close to the edge, because it's terribly clear that the president doesn't like what most of the press says about him, and it looks as though the American press are becoming a little more aggressive. And I make that point because one of the things we forget about the office of presidency is that he not only has an executive role, but he's head of state. He's commander in chief, you know. So there is a kind of deference which American reporters give to presidents, and I see a little bit of that wearing away and getting a little thin at the edges these days.
Let's go back to early days for you. Your father worked in an oil refinery.
Yep.
Would you describe your childhood as
I had enjoyable? I mean, I know it's people tend to say this in almost a cliched way, but when I reflect on this and whenever I look back on this, I had an absolutely gilded childhood. We had no money. We were reasonably poor. But, you know, somehow people didn't sort of equate their lives with how much money you had. We had, in the real sense of that word, and I've thought about that, you know, many times over the years, we had a community. People looked out for each other. I remember my father would reprimand me if I didn't say good morning or good afternoon to people I passed in the street. And
would
he would always say to me,
would he?
Those are the people who, if anything happens to you, they will look after you. They are your first port of call. So that was the kind of community we lived in.
Wow.
There were problems. There were all sorts of society problems. As I say, people didn't have very much money. And so, you know, there were robberies and there was the odd murder and so on. But in general, it was very, very peaceful. And I had, you know, we were a family of four children. We made our own fun. We had a fun among others in the village and really had a great, great, great time. We were driven relentlessly to do well at school. I remember that. And that was occasionally very bruising because, you know, you wanted to play cricket or football or
so or how relentless was that?
Oh, it was. It was always. I mean, West Indian parents of my generation seem to have a very clear idea of what their children needed to do if they were to make a kind of success. And I say to people, my mother had this annoying habit of reading out quotations which were supposed to be aspirational. One of them I always sort of kind of resented because it terrified me. She used to quote, you know, somebody said, "Lives of great men all remind us we can make our lives sublime, and departing leave behind us footprints on the sands of time." And I thought, there's no way I can leave a footprint on the sand of time. That is much too aspirational for me. But that is the direction in which we were propelled. And as I say, it was pretty, pretty relentless.
And looking back, with the benefit of hindsight, were they right to be that relentless?
Well, I mean, you know, the way they did it, I think I benefited enormously from it.
Would you do that as a parent?
I think the atmosphere has changed so much that I'm not too sure that anybody listens to you as much as that we were made to listen to my parents in those days. Times, alas, have changed. Many of our children today seem to know much better than we do as parents what's good for them. But so it's a slightly different climate.
Yeah, but it's that dynamic, isn't it? Is that a good thing that kids these days, you know, do you not hark back to the days actually where there was more respect for the wisdom of elders?
Yeah, well, it's nice to hark back, and as you get older, you do it constantly. But you know, things move on, life moves on, and I think that is the realization that you have to, you know, adjust to more than any other. The world is constantly changing. It is not as it was when I was growing up in the Caribbean.
Constantly changed for you when you came to London in 1969. What were your impressions of the city?
Well, it was very different to what I expected. I say that because we were brought up, as people who were born in a British colony, to think we knew everything about London. London was the great metropolitan centre, and all our school books had stories about Trafalgar Square and Nelson's Column and Francis Drake and Hawkins and all these great explorers. Drake, who hounded the Spaniards around the Cape, the Armada, and about all the wonderful people who did so much, the few who did so much for so many. We thought we knew London. When you come to London, it is, in fact, an entirely different place. It's much, much larger than you think. But I had the great, great fortune of going to Bush House as my first job, which was the World Service, Overseas Service. And it was an extraordinarily wonderful place to work. Yeah. In the first place, it was very international. You know, you sat next to somebody from Yugoslavia at lunch and you talked to people from China and people from Uganda and people from other parts of Southeast Asia and so on. And it was a very kind of international atmosphere. So that only at the end of the day, when you were going home on the train, did you sink back into what London life was really like. There was a difference. And Bush House was a great cushion for me, and it made the transition, I must say, much, much, much easier.
And we're talking here, London 1969, Bush House then, you joined ITN 1973.
Yep. And came to Northern Ireland.
How relevant back then was your skin colour? Because I noted that you said you didn't ever want to be seen as a token black reporter.
No, well, I
did
mean,
that ever happen, do you
I
feel?
Don't think this was my... what I wanted to make sure. I didn't want to be employed because of the colour of my skin. And so one of the things in which, I mean, it worked out in my career is I insisted on being, when I joined ITN, in doing everything that everybody else did. And the big, big, big story, I mean, as strange as it may seem now, was Northern Ireland. It was the top news story every night on the news at 10. And so I cut my broadcasting teeth in a way at ITN in Northern Ireland, doing a lot of those stories during the so-called, what euphemistically called, the Troubles.
Yeah.
And so I spent a lot of time there.
Good place to cut your teeth, isn't it?
It got me noticed.
Yeah.
It got me noticed, and I was doing what everybody else was doing.
But was there any element whatsoever, do you feel, in your progress, beyond talent and ability, obviously, as well as that, was there anybody wanting you to be on screen because you were black and it ticked a box?
Yes, I'm not that I'm aware of. I mean, I'm not too sure. I'm sure that when ITN employed me, they were in no doubt about who I was.
Yeah.
And I was a black West Indian. But I didn't get the impression that they'd gone out looking for black West Indian reporters. They might have found many others. But the impetus for doing what I wanted to do came from me. I decided how I wanted my career to go. And I was terribly fortunate to find people who didn't stand in my way.
Well, what was your ambition in the early days? Did you set yourself goals?
Oh, gosh.
Did you want to be an anchor? Or
ambition.
What?
I never, ever... I'm not sure that in this industry there is not a kind of career ladder. You know, I mean, in the civil service, you know, you go from grade one to grade two, or is it the other way around, or to grade three or grade four.
Yeah.
There's nothing like that in broadcasting. You take your chances when they come to you. Nigel Ryan, my first editor, said to me after I'd been there for a few months, he said to me, do you know, you should probably think of doing some anchoring of the news. And then he said, more extraordinarily, you know, you could have a career like Sandy Gold's. You could travel around the world for a bit and then do the news for a bit. I thought all my ships had come in at once. I thought I'd won the jackpot. And that is what I did for a lot of my career. And I must say, I count myself terribly, terribly fortunate to have had that chance to do both of those things, you know, to report from around the world and to be anchor of the news. You've scooped the pools.
Yeah, you have in one area of your life, haven't you? But to do what you did over many, many years, I think you touched on it at the top of this interview, they are very long days. And I guess when you ultimately leave it, you must reflect on What did you sacrifice for that?
Yeah.
Because ultimately, oh, so you walk out the door.
A lot.
Exactly. So you walk out the door after 11 o'clock at night, whatever time it is. And, you know, it doesn't really matter if you're on telly, does it, in the real world?
No.
And you haven't seen your family for quite a lot of the day.
Absolutely right.
Do you regret any of that?
Oh, I regret everything that I missed in family life.
What did you miss?
You know, well, the normal things that, as you say, people do throughout the day with their families.
Yeah, but what did you personally miss?
Oh, I missed it all. I missed, you know, probably not having more holidays, more time with members of your family, just doing normal things. I remember when I left ITN, I was driving through London, and it was a lovely summer's evening. And at about 7, 8 o'clock, people were sitting outside bars, having drinks, chatting and talking. And I thought, my goodness, I did so little of that. And of course, that would have been nice. But, you know, as the man says and Robert Frost says, you know, I chose a different path. And you can't have both. You make a choice.
Did you have children?
Yes, I did.
Did you miss birthdays? Did you miss them growing up?
I'm sure they'll tell me. I don't remember how many I missed, but I'm sure they'll tell me all how many I missed. You there's no question at all about the fact that you make enormous sacrifices in this profession. One of the other things was, you know, one morning you'd set off to go. One morning I remember I set off to go and play some tennis. I got a call to say, you know, you have to get to Washington. And I dashed everything, rushed to the airport, even in my tennis clothes, to get to Washington. Do you know, it's that's the life. That's what happens. And when it happens, you do it. And somehow you tell yourself, you know, all this is great. This is what is necessary to be a reporter. You know, on reflection, you wonder, well, was all that really necessary sometimes?
Well, why don't you answer that now, was it?
Well, I think it was, it's what you do. And I was never able to, you know, to sort of divide my life into highly compartmentalized parts like that.
Often with someone, I'm just aware of the time here, we've about 4 minutes left with you. Often with someone like you, because of the job you were doing, anchoring the news, journalists, so we don't get to know, you know, your preferences, your values in life. I wonder, are you prepared to tell us now? Are you a Tory or a Labour voter?
Oh gosh, no, I never get.
You wouldn't tell us?
It's just that I don't think anybody is really that interested in my politics.
And I'm interested. I
know you are. Well, I've never been. I consider myself a classic liberal person. I like good values. I like great things for the country. I have a great feeling about community. I like life, what London life is like.
Well, let's take the big issue now that's in the news. Are you for or against Brexit?
Well, to be very honest, this is something that people voted for. I've always been an internationalist. I've always thought that, you know, as somebody said, I think Gordon Brown or somebody said, you know, we're kind of better together. I like the idea, the concept of nations coming together. One of my first stories I covered
in
the
West
Indies.
So you're a Remainer?
I would always think that people should have wide associations. And I think the Prime Minister said it yesterday, you know, we are leaving the Union, but we are not leaving Europe. I think that's a sort of really worthy sentiment. We can't leave Europe. We can't leave the world. I tell people, do you know,
are you
other
worried
day,
for the future?
No, I'm not at all. But this interconnectivity is what I'm talking about. You know, a few years ago during the financial crash, people in Kansas defaulted on their mortgages. 3 Icelandic banks went bust. We are part of the world. We can't be anything else. That will never change. That's the international, globalized way in which we live.
Although there are some people saying that we are jumping into the unknown to such an extent where a lot might change, either for the better or the worse, but the reality is we don't know.
No. But it's all, at this stage of negotiations, you never do. And I've covered enough of these things to know that, it's always stepping into the dark, really. and doing the best you can. But, you know, there are people who are highly paid to do this job, so I'm sure that they'll devote all their energies to doing it well.
Did you vote?
Sorry?
Did you vote in the referendum?
Oh, yes, yes, I did vote, yes.
So you're disappointed with the result then?
No, no, I mean, disappointments are too, you know, too crude a description for some of these things, really. This is a democracy. You accept what people do, and that's what happened. And I think that's the case with our current political status now.
What are your hobbies in the last minute we have left?
I play tennis. I'm a
still,
man.
Still, are you not?
I'm a man.
Are you not?
I played on Tuesday.
Without me being rude, are your knees not giving in by now?
On Tuesday.
And are you out playing tennis? I can hardly walk, and I'm in my 40s, and you're out playing tennis.
I have a pretty low slung car, and
okay.
the picture of my getting into the car after tennis is not a pretty one.
I always enjoy talking to you. We talked a couple of years ago, and I enjoyed it then, and I enjoy it now. You're a gentleman, sir.
Stephen, thank you so much.
And thank you for spending some time with us.
It's
thank
been
you.
My great pleasure.
Thank you.